Okay, let's unpack this. We talk a lot on this deep dive about artificial intelligence, but if you've been following the field, you know the conversation has just dramatically changed, especially over, what, the last 18 months?
Oh, absolutely. It's night and day.
We're really moving past that sort of static model, right? Just asking a chatbot a question, getting back a pre-trained response.
Yeah, that feels almost primitive now, doesn't it?
It really does. We are witnessing, I think you called it a seismic shift in the AI landscape. Moving towards systems that can, well, actively do things, reason, act, collaborate.
That's right. That's the core of it. The fundamental evolution we're tracking is this shift from AI being, a passive information processor.
Like a super smart calculator or text generator.
Exactly, to an active entity. And this whole move towards autonomous systems, it's completely built on what we call agentic design.
Exactly. And for you, our listener, whether you're, I don't know, prepping for a strategic business meeting about AI implementation, or maybe you're just deeply curious about the tech, the architecture that's driving this next generation. Our mission today is really to provide a clear shortcut. We are diving deep into the blueprints, the five most influential architectural pillars, you could say,
Yeah, the foundation.
the foundations that are shaping AI capable of true autonomy. So think of this as your guide to the inner workings of an AI that doesn't just wait for your next command, it actually plans its own next step.
And that clarity is so crucial because these agentic design patterns, they really are the foundational logic for building these autonomous systems. They're what enable AI to handle, complex multi-step problem solving, to integrate and even execute external tools, run code, and fundamentally to pursue self-improvement.
Self-improvement, yeah.
They are the difference, really, between having a high-performance engine on a stand and having a self-driving car that can navigate the real world.
So we're talking about AI moving from just like reading the book to actively writing the next chapter, making decisions, correcting its own mistakes along the way.
Precisely. It's truly transformative, a whole different paradigm.
Okay, let's get into the specifics then. Let's start with that dynamic action piece. Our first foundational blueprint, pillar one, the React agent.
React.
Stands for reasoning and acting, which, okay, it's an elegant name, describes the mechanism pretty well, but the implementation, that's where the real depth is, isn't it?
It is. And what's truly fascinating here, I think, is how React agents mirror human problem solving so closely.
How so?
Well, think about it. When you face a complex task, you don't just like execute a whole sequence of actions blindly, right?
No, definitely not.
You think, you try something out, you observe the result, what happened, and then you adapt based on that.
Okay.
React essentially enables AI to combine this kind of step-by-step internal thinking, this reasoning, with the ability to actually use external tools, things like APIs, databases, web searches.
Which is how it interacts with the world.
Exactly. That's the only way an AI can interact dynamically with the real world or, up-to-date information.
Okay, so let's break down that iterative cycle because you said this is where the power, but maybe also the cost of React really comes in. It's this continuous loop, right? Three components.
That's right. Three essential components: thought, action, and observation.
Thought, action, observation. Okay.
So the process kicks off with thought. This is the internal reasoning phase. Here, the agent looks at its current goal, considers what it learned from any previous steps, any observations, and it decides and plans its next move. What should I do now? And crucially, this thought process is explicitly logged. That's a key feature of the React pattern. It gives you transparency. You can audit the reasoning.
Ah, so you can see why I decided to do what it did.
Precisely. Then, following that thought, the agent executes an action.
Okay.
Now, this is typically using an external tool or making an API call. So, for example, if the goal is, say, summarize recent market data, the action might be calling a specific financial database API.
Got it. And that action isn't the end goal itself, right? It's just a step towards it.
Exactly right. It's a means to an end. The outcomes of that action, or maybe the lack of an outcome, maybe an error, that feeds back into the system as the observation.
Okay, so the results.
The results, the data, any errors it encountered during the action phase. This observation then informs the next cycle of thought.
So it's not just following a script.
No, not at all. It uses that real-world feedback, that observation, to dynamically adapt its plan. It can correct errors, refine its approach. It's constantly adjusting.
Okay, let's make that concrete with a trip planning example you mentioned. A React agent starts, thanks. Okay, I need to find the cheapest flights for a family of four to Hawaii. That's the thought.
Hi.
Then it uses a flight API. That's the action. But the observation comes back and all the prices are, say, $5,000. Way too high.
Okay, budget exceeded.
Exactly. So the next thought isn't, okay, book it. It's adaptive. It's,
yeah.
Whoa, the budget is exceeded. I need to maybe relax the date constraints or look at nearby airports and search again.
Perfect example. That dynamic loop, that's the source of the pattern's incredible versatility. The real strength of React is its robustness. It can handle these problems that need, you know, deep sequential decision making.
Because it breaks them down.
It breaks them down into small, digestible, self-correcting steps. And that makes the agent far less likely to just fail completely when it hits unexpected real-world data compared to, say, a single-pass model that just generates an answer once.
That sounds, almost too good to be true, though. If it mimics how we solve problems so well, why aren't all AI systems just built this way? What are the downsides, the trade-offs when you introduce all this iteration and tool use?
Yeah, there are definitely significant trade-offs.
Mm.
And they center largely on cost and complexity.
Okay.
First off, that iterative nature means the computational cost could be really high.
Because it's thinking over and over again.
Exactly. Every time the agent cycles through thought, action, and observation, it often means running multiple full inference cycles on the underlying large language model. Could be the same model, could be different ones.
Right.
This can easily make the cost per query for a React system, say, 5 to 10 times higher than just making a direct query to the same base model.
Wow, 5 to 10 times. Okay, that's substantial.
It really is. And beyond just the resource consumption, you face these complex integration headaches.
With the tools.
With the tools, yeah.
Huh.
Tool integration sounds simple on paper, just plug in an API.
Mm-hmm.
But in reality, you have to manage asynchronous calls, handle potential latency issues, standardize all sorts of different data formats coming back.
Oh, yeah.
And you have to try and anticipate all the ways these external services might fail or give you garbage data. Poorly managed tools can introduce just profound inefficiencies and totally unexpected errors right into the loop.
And what about the risk of it just getting stuck? The dreaded infinite loop. I can imagine if the observation phase keeps coming back with useless information, the AI just spins its wheels, right?
Absolutely. That is a critical failure mode, and it's a real concern. If the observation phase provides ambiguous feedback or irrelevant stuff or just not enough guidance, maybe an API continually returns some generic error code without explaining why.
Yeah.
The agent can definitely get stuck. It might just endlessly repeat the same thought action sequence without ever getting closer to the actual goal.
So you need safeguards.
You do.
Yeah.
Building robust internal stop conditions, good error handling mechanisms to detect and break these loops, that's actually a significant engineering challenge in building reliable React systems.
Okay, that focus on structural robustness needing those safeguards, that actually leads us nicely into our second pillar. This one takes dynamic action even further. Pillar two. Kodak agents.
Ah, Kodak, yes.
So if React gives the AI agency and like decision making and using tools, Kodak gives it agency over the environment itself, right? By letting it actually write and run code.
That's the key distinction. Kodak agents are, I think, truly transformative because they break that dependency on needing predefined external tools for everything.
Oh, okay.
Instead of just using a fixed set of APIs you've given it, a Kodak agent can actively write, execute, and then refine code, usually something like Python or maybe shell scripts.
Inside a safe space, hopefully.
Oh, absolutely. Within a highly secure, protected environment, a sandbox. This gives the AI the power to solve technical problems directly, perform complex data transformations, interact with an operating system in a controlled way, things React alone couldn't do.
Okay, that full autonomy loop, especially for technical problem solving, that needs a closer look. Can you walk us through the Kodak cycle from, say, a human request to the AI having finished working refined code?
Sure. It typically begins with a high-level natural language request from a human. Mm. The human defines the desired outcome. Maybe something like, analyze this CSV file I uploaded and generate a chart showing the 12-month moving average.
Okay. Pretty standard data task.
Right. The agent's first phase then is code generation. It figures out what code is needed and produces the script. Maybe using Python with libraries like Pandas for analysis and Matplotlib for the chart.
Got it. Writes the code. Then what?
Then it moves to the execution phase. And this is the absolute crucial part. The code is run only within that protected sandbox environment, never directly on the host machine.
The sandbox. Okay.
After execution, the agent enters the analysis phase.
Mm.
He reviews the results. What did the code actually output? It looks at the execution logs. Did it run successfully? Any standard output messages? Any error messages?
Right. And that sandbox, as you said, it's not just like a nice to have, it's the core safety feature here. Can you emphasize again why that resource isolation is so absolutely essential?
The sandbox is everything for Code Act. It operates under the principle of least privilege. It physically prevents the executed code from accessing restricted system resources, from making persistent changes to the host system, or critically from accessing the underlying kernel of the host operating system.
So it contains any mistakes.
Exactly. It ensures that if the agent makes a mistake in its code, maybe a harmful logical error, say it accidentally writes code that tries to recursively delete files because of a bug, the damage is contained entirely within that isolated environment. It cannot compromise the underlying machine or the network. It protects the integrity of the host system while still giving the agent the freedom it needs to iterate on potentially risky code until it gets it right.
Okay, so containment is key. Then, once the analysis phase identifies an error, or maybe the output isn't quite right, the agent goes into its iteration phase.
Yes, exactly. That's the iteration, debugging, and refinement phase.
Mm-hmm.
If the agent detects, say, a syntax error or a runtime failure, or maybe the chart generated doesn't meet the specified requirements,
mm-hmm.
it goes back, rewrites the problematic part, refines the code, and then re-executes it in the sandbox. And this loop, generate, execute, analyze, refine, continues until the task is successfully and hopefully verifiably completed.
That's powerful.
It is. What's really important here is that these agents essentially automate that entire coding lifecycle, writing, testing, debugging, refining. That can massively accelerate software development for certain tasks and data automation work.
Okay, but if Code Act is so effective at automating that whole coding and debugging loop, why don't we see it just replacing all developer roles immediately? I mean, what are the hard limits here? Especially when tasks are really complex.
Yeah, that's the multi-million dollar question, isn't it? And the limitations are still vast and complex. They're primarily related to nuanced context in dealing with distributed systems.
Okay.
While Code Act agents can excel at well-defined, sort of isolated tasks, like writing a single function, performing a local data analysis, they really struggle immensely with tasks that require deep domain knowledge, complex architectural decision-making.
Ah, the bigger picture stuff.
Exactly. Or interactions across multiple, maybe externally managed systems where it doesn't control everything. Think about integrating with legacy enterprise systems or complex cloud infrastructure. And even within its sandbox, we still face the technical challenge of ensuring the AI accurately interprets nuanced human intentions in the code.
What do you mean by nuanced?
Well, a human developer might know that when a manager asks for a quick analysis, that implies maybe skipping an expensive full dataset scan and using a sample.
Right, practicality.
Yeah, but the agent might just default to the most literal interpretation, analyze everything, leading to massive inefficiency or cost overruns. Furthermore, while the sandbox mitigates the security risk, developing robust, truly fail-safe error handling mechanisms within the agent itself to cover all possible edge cases and logical flaws, that remains a huge engineering hurdle.
And thinking ahead, when we eventually start combining this Code Act pattern with something like multi-agent systems, which we'll get to, the complexity just explodes, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Exponentially. Debugging a single Kodak loop is already difficult enough.
Yeah.
Debugging a system where, say, Agent A's faulty code execution messes up a data structure that Agent B relies on, which then causes a downstream Kodak failure in Agent C, you're adding a level of debugging complexity that's kind of like tracking down intermittent errors across disparate teams, time zones, and tech stacks in a large company.
Wow.
Despite these hurdles, though, make no mistake, Code Act agents are fundamentally changing how we approach automated technical problem solving. It's a really powerful pillar.
Okay, let's transition now. We've talked about dynamic action reasoning, acting, coding. Now let's talk about ensuring the quality of that action. Which brings us, I think, to pillar three, self-reflection agents.
Yes, self-reflection.
This is where we're trying to build something like metacognition, the ability to think about one's own thinking directly into the AI itself. Is that fair?
That's a great way to put it. This pattern introduces an absolutely essential layer of internal quality control. Self-reflection agents are designed to critically evaluate their own outputs.
Their own work.
Their own work, exactly. Against either learned criteria or predefined standards you give it. This capability is frankly non-negotiable for applications where things like high accuracy or a very specific nuanced tone or maybe logical soundness are mandatory.
Right, like legal documents or scientific papers.
Precisely. It moves us beyond just getting rapid output towards right. getting trustworthy, reliable output.
So we stop measuring success just by speed, and we start adding this layer of self-audited trustworthiness.
Okay, explain that refinement cycle more precisely. What does reflection actually look like for a large language model? How does it critique itself?
Right. The core cycle is generate, reflect, refine.
Generate, reflect, refine.
Okay. So after the initial content generation, maybe that's a draft of a technical report, a chunk of code, maybe a complex narrative answer, the agent then executes a separate internal process. This is the reflection phase. In this phase, the agent sort of steps out of its generator role and acts as its own internal critic.
Puts on a different hat.
Exactly. It compares the output it just generated against certain benchmarks. These could be predefined standards, specific constraints you gave it in the original prompt, make sure it's under 500 words and addresses points A, B, and C, or even against a set of, like, adversarial self-prompts designed specifically to probe for common flaws.
Interesting. So it asks itself tough questions. It does. It looks for logical inconsistencies. Factual errors, maybe, if it's connected to a verification tool or database. Failures in tone or structure or clarity.
So it's essentially editing its own work with a critical eye, maybe even multiple times over.
Precisely. That critique it generates then feeds directly into the refine phase, where the agent makes the necessary revisions based on his own findings. And crucially, this cycle, generate, reflect, refine, can repeat, sometimes multiple times.
Okay.
Each loop progressively enhances the quality and reliability of the output. The agent is essentially performing its own internal QA, catching subtle errors or inconsistencies that maybe a human reviewer might miss, or certainly that a single pass generation would just overlook completely.
That sounds incredibly useful.
It's vital for high-stakes applications. Think regulatory compliance, documentation, scientific discovery abstracts, things where getting it wrong has serious consequences.
Okay, that continuous refinement is powerful, but let's talk brass tacks, business reality. If this process repeats multiple times, running that big model again and again, how much of a performance hit are we talking? And therefore, how much of a financial hit for the user? That sounds expensive.
It is. The performance hit is probably the single biggest constraint on using this pattern widely. Reflection is computationally expensive, full stop.
Because it's more inference runs.
Exactly. Yeah. Because it requires rerunning that full inference cycle, often on the same large model, multiple times. So for a complex task that might need, say, 3 reflection loops to get right, you're essentially paying for 4 full generations. The initial output plus the 3 critiques and subsequent refinements.
Wow.
This means the cost per query for a self-reflecting agent can easily be, again, maybe 5x to 10x higher or even more compared to a non-reflecting system using the same base model.
Okay, so that makes it maybe prohibitive for, like, high-volume consumer chatbots, but maybe essential for specialized high-value business tools where that accuracy justifies the cost?
That's exactly the trade-off. High cost, high quality assurance. Furthermore, just designing the reflection criteria themselves is notoriously difficult.
How so?
Well, if the task is very objective, like check for balanced parentheses in this block of code, that's relatively easy to define criteria for.
Sure, clear rules.
But if the task is subjective, say, ensure the tone of this marketing email is persuasive yet authoritative and empathetic, defining effective criteria that the AI can reliably audit itself against, that becomes an immensely complex task, often deeply tied to specific domain knowledge and subtle human judgment.
Right. How do you quantify persuasive?
Exactly. It's hard. And you raised a great point earlier about the risk of overcorrection. You want a quality controller, but you don't want, like, a neurotic perfectionist who never finishes the job because they're tweaking commas. That's the tension you have to manage. Agents can sometimes become overly focused on minor, maybe inconsequential details. They can enter these inefficient refinement cycles where the marginal improvement in quality just doesn't justify the significant computational cost or the delay in getting a result out.
So you need to set limits.
You do.
Yeah.
We are essentially managing the agent's internal drive for perfection against the very real-world demands for timely, usable, good enough results. Finding that balance is key.
That's a fascinating constraint. Okay, let's shift gears a bit now. We've done internal quality control with self-reflection. Let's look outward at external collaboration. This takes us to pillar 4, multi-agent workflows, often called MAS for multi-agent systems.
Yes, MAS, the team approach.
This is how we move complexity, maybe, from one single monolithic AI brain trying to do everything to an entire specialized team of AIs working together.
That's the core idea. MAS is the pattern designed specifically to tackle extreme complexity by embracing specialization and essentially the division of labor.
Like an assembly line almost.
Kind of.
Yeah.
Instead of tasking one massive general-purpose AI with a huge multifaceted problem, you deploy a team of specialized agents. Each agent in the team is designed, maybe even trained, for a very specific subtask or domain. This can drastically improve efficiency and overall capability for large-scale projects.
Okay, but if you have a team, you need a manager, right? The success of a multi-agent system must rely almost entirely on the orchestrator, that central management layer. What are the big technical challenges that come up when you try to manage all that communication and delegation between different AIs?
You've hit the nail on the head. The orchestration is the absolute heart of the system, and it's hard. You need either a central orchestrator agent or maybe a very robust, predefined communication protocol, often involving something like a shared message bus or a shared memory space, to handle the task delegation. The orchestrator needs to figure out which agent gets which piece of the work. It needs to manage the interaction between agents as they pass results back and forth. And finally, it needs to aggregate all the partial results into a single, coherent, final output.
That sounds like a lot of overhead.
It is. It introduces significant overhead. The orchestrator has to parse the complex overall goal, accurately decompose it into logical subtasks, identify the most suitable specialized agent for each subtask from its pool, and then manage the flow of intermediate results between them, often asynchronously.
Yeah.
This management layer itself can be computationally substantial, and the whole system can really suffer if the orchestrator is poorly designed or if communication latency between the agents becomes a bottleneck.
Okay, let's go back to that analogy you used, creating a personalized travel itinerary. How would that task decomposition actually work across a team of specialized agents in an MAS setup?
All right, good example. You might break it down into, say, three core specialized roles. First, you could have a research agent. Maybe this agent itself uses something like agentic RGAG principles, which we'll get to.
Okay.
Its job is purely to gather raw information: destinations, flight options, hotel reviews, local activities, visa requirements, whatever is needed.
All the facts.
Just the facts. Second, you'd have a planning agent. This agent receives all that research data, and its job is to construct the actual day-by-day schedule. It has to adhere strictly to constraints like travel time between locations, the overall budget, user preferences. I hate museums but love hiking.
Got it. The scheduler.
The scheduler. And finally, you might have a reviewer agent. This agent could perhaps use self-reflection principles internally. Its job is to assess the overall feasibility and quality of the plan generated by the planning agent.
Like a QA step.
Exactly. It checks for conflicts. Are there double bookings? Is the travel time between cities unrealistic? Does it actually meet the user's stated goals? And the key is that these agents all need to communicate, usually via the orchestrator. The planning agent might tell the research agent, "Hey, the current hotel options you found blow the budget. Go find cheaper ones." The reviewer agent might flag an impossible connection time back to the planning agent.
The strength here seems obvious.
Hmm.
Potentially much higher efficiency and better overall performance because you're leveraging modular expertise, right? Each agent is good at its one thing.
Exactly. Plus, modularity usually enhances scalability. You can add more agents or upgrade individual ones. And debugging might be easier in some ways because you can isolate problems within a single specialized agent.
Okay, but the weakness managing the team that sounds like a project manager's absolute worst nightmare just translated into code.
It really can be. The potential for conflict between agents is inherently high. Well, what if the research agent is optimized to find the most unique, off-the-beaten-path experiences, but the planning agent is strictly optimized to minimize travel time and cost?
Ah, competing objectives.
Exactly. These competing objectives, if they're not perfectly managed and reconciled by the orchestrator, can lead to system deadlocks where no progress is made, or outputs that are a weird compromise satisfying no one.
And then there's the debugging nightmare you hinted at. It feels less like debugging one program and more like debugging a complex distributed system, akin to tracking down an intermittent bug caused by two human developers working with slightly different versions of a shared database or API.
That's a perfect analogy. Debugging these distributed MAS systems is exponentially more complex than isolating an error in a single monolithic piece of code.
Yeah.
You're no longer just tracking code failure within one agent. You're potentially tracking communication failures between agents, state conflicts where agents have different views of the world, data integrity issues as information gets passed around.
It could be anywhere.
It could be anywhere. You might discover that the root cause of an error manifesting in agency isn't in agency's code at all, but in a subtly misunderstood message passed to it by Agent A 3 steps earlier in the workflow. This demands really sophisticated logging, tracing, and observability frameworks across the entire multi-agent workflow, just to have a chance of figuring out what went wrong.
Okay, that brings us to our 5th and final foundational blueprint for today. Pillar 5, Agentic Array. This is all about intelligent information handling and synthesis. Now, retrieval augmented generation, or RAG, that term is probably familiar to many of our listeners now.
Yeah, RA has become pretty standard.
But adding the agentic part, that seems to transform it from just a bolt-on tool into something more like an active thinking researcher. Is that right?
That's a very good way to describe the difference. Standard RAG, the kind most people are familiar with, is essentially passive.
Huh?
You give it a query, it does a semantic search across a database or a document library. It pulls back, say, the top 5 or 10 most relevant chunks of text based on similarity. And then it just feeds those raw, often unfiltered text snippets directly into the context window of the language model, along with your original query.
Right. And then it just says, okay, LLM, generate an answer based on this pile of text I found.
Exactly. It basically dumps the context on the model's lap and hopes the model can make sense of it and synthesize a good answer.
Okay, so how does Agentic RAG elevate that? What does the agent layer actually do?
Agentic RAG fundamentally changes this by inserting an autonomous intelligent agent layer to actively manage and orchestrate the entire retrieval and synthesis process. This agent doesn't just passively relay chunks of text. It evaluates the findings, it strategizes how to use the information, it refines the search.
Okay, so it's more proactive. It sounds like it becomes a highly critical researcher that actually tries to understand the context and the quality of the information before it even starts letting the LLM write the answer.
That's the perfect description. The agent layer actively orchestrates the retrieval process in several key ways. First, it might involve pre-retrieval planning. For a complex query, it might break it down into a sequence of sub-questions that require different targeted searches.
Ah, okay. Decomposes the query first.
Right. Second, it typically performs multiple refined searches. It doesn't just do one search and take the top results. It might look at the initial results and say, these are too broad, and then automatically refine the keywords or add filters like a date range and search again. Iterative search,
okay.
Third, and this is arguably the most critical part, it performs post-retrieval evaluation. Before passing information to the generation model, the agent evaluates the retrieved sources. It might check for credibility. Is this from a known reliable source? Mm. Internal consistency. Do different retrieved documents contradict each other? And relevance. Does this actually answer the specific nuance of the user's query?
Wow. So it's acting like a filter and a fact checker almost.
In a way, yes. It ensures the final response isn't just informed by some external data, but is contextually accurate and reliable based on evidence that the agent itself has actively gathered and vetted.
Okay, so let's use that complex query example again.
Yeah.
If I ask about, say, the long-term economic impact of renewable energy subsidies, but specifically comparing the U.S., Germany, and China, a standard ARG might just pull up random documents mentioning those terms.
Right. It might grab a paragraph about U.S. solar subsidies, another about German wind farms from 5 years ago, and maybe a news article about China's policy and just mush them together.
But an agentic ARG system would handle that differently.
Very differently. The agent would likely recognize the need for comparative analysis across 3 distinct regions. It might dynamically initiate 3 separate specialized searches, one focused on U.S. economic data related to subsidies, one for Germany, one for China.
Targeted searches.
Exactly. Then, crucially, it would compare the findings from those potentially differing studies or reports. It might identify conflicts. This study says subsidies boosted jobs in Germany, but this other one says the effect was minimal. It might note discrepancies in methodologies or timeframes.
So it synthesizes. It doesn't just concatenate.
Precisely. Only after that evaluation and comparison would it guide the generation model to synthesize a nuanced answer. The answer might explicitly say, studies in the U.S. show X, while findings in Germany suggest Y, and data from China is still emerging but indicates Z. It takes those different, possibly competing contexts into account explicitly.
which should lead to an output that's far more reliable, nuanced, and much less prone to hallucination or just repeating outdated information it happened to find.
That's the goal. The core strength is clearly moving beyond simple, often brittle, keyword or vector similarity, matching towards a much more sophisticated, context-aware, and verifiable assembly of information.
It sounds like it significantly boosts the accuracy and the trustworthiness of the generated responses.
It really does. By having agents actively refine queries, evaluate source credibility, and synthesize information intelligently, the system becomes much more robust and adaptable, especially for complex, ambiguous, or multifaceted user needs. It delivers smarter, more reliable, and contextually grounded outputs, which is absolutely crucial for serious applications in fields like law, medicine, finance, research, anywhere where accuracy really matters.
Okay, but what are the main pitfalls here? Because this sounds like it adds quite a few layers. This multi-step, self-refining search and evaluation process, it sounds potentially slow, and also adds more decision-making points where the agent itself could introduce errors.
Both are valid concerns. The complexity of the agent orchestration is definitely a major potential bottleneck. It requires careful, intensive engineering to design and manage the flow of these multiple search, evaluation, and synthesis steps without introducing excessive latency. Making it fast and smart is hard.
Right, and it still depends on the data it has access to, doesn't it?
Absolutely. While the agent layer is designed to improve the quality of the information used, the system's overall performance remains highly dependent on the quality of the underlying knowledge base or document corpus it's searching over. If the core retrieval system contains flawed, sparse, biased, or just irrelevant data,
garbage in, garbage out.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
The agent can only optimize the search for garbage. It can't magically invent reliable information that isn't there in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
The quality of the source data is still paramount.
And you mentioned the agent itself could make mistakes.
Yes, that's the other key risk. The agent itself is an AI, usually another language model, and is making judgments. There's a distinct risk that the agent might misinterpret the retrieved context.
How so?
It might misunderstand a crucial caveat in a research paper. It might mistake a strongly worded opinion piece for objective factual research. It might fail to grasp the temporal limitations of the source material using data from 2010 to answer a question about 2024. This kind of critical misinterpretation by the retrieval agent, even if it found the correct source documents, could still lead the final generation model to produce inaccurate or misleading outputs. So the agent adds intelligence, but also another potential point of failure. So if we connect this all to the bigger picture now, it becomes really clear that these five patterns we've discussed, React, Kodak, self-reflection, multi-agent workflows, and agentic Arlen.
Right, they're building blocks.
They're foundational architectures, exactly. And they are designed, really, to be stacked and combined synergistically.
It definitely seems like the most sophisticated AI systems starting to be deployed or talked about. They don't rely on just one of these pillars. They strategically combine several of them to handle different stages of a really massive, complex task. Can you maybe give us a concrete architectural example of how these might be combined in a real-world system?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's consider a hypothetical system designed to, say, rapidly prototype a new software feature based on a high-level requirement.
Okay, complex task.
Complex task.
Yeah.
The overarching structure would almost certainly be a multi-agent workflow, MAS. Because you need different specializations.
Right, the team approach.
The team approach.
Okay.
Within that MAS, you might employ a React agent as the primary task planner or project manager.
Okay.
This React planner would reason about the high-level goal, implement user authentication. It would use external tools maybe to check the current status of the code repository. That's the action. It observes the existing code base. That's the observation. To figure out the best next step to take.
Makes sense. Planning and reacting.
Then when the planning agent decides that a specific piece of code needs to be written, maybe the login function itself, it doesn't try to write it. It delegates that subtask to a specialized Kodak agent.
Ah, the coder agent.
The coder agent. This Kodak agent then does its loop. It generates the necessary code, executes it within its secure sandbox, analyzes the results, debugs any errors, and refines it.
Okay.
But before that Kodak agent submits its final working code back to the MAS orchestrator, it might internally engage yet another specialized agent, a self-reflection agent.
The internal QA.
Exactly. The self-reflection agent critically evaluates the code generated by the Kodak agent. Does it meet security best practices? Are there potential edge cases missed? Are there logical flaws? It ensures a layer of quality control before the code even gets integrated.
Wow. Okay. That's getting complex. And where does agentic Arby's fit in?
Well, Imagine the system needs to implement authentication using a niche third-party library, or comply with a complex, newly updated industry standard like OAuth 2.1 extensions, before the React Planner can even devise the steps or the Kodak agent can write the code.
It needs reliable information.
It needs reliable, up-to-date, verified information. That entire research function, finding the right documentation, understanding the standard, maybe finding best practice examples that would likely be handled by an agentic RGI system within the MAS.
So the agentic RGI feeds the reliable context to the other agents.
Precisely. Agentic RGI provides the trustworthy, validated context that the React Planner needs to make good decisions and that the Kodak agent needs to write correct and secure code. So you see this integration where the strengths of one pattern compensate for the weaknesses of another.
Right.
MAS handles the overall complexity by dividing labor. React handles the high-level planning and adaptation. Kodak handles the actual execution of technical tasks. Self-reflection ensures the quality of those tasks. And agentic RGI ensures everyone is working with reliable, current information.
That combination is really what allows AI to start tackling challenges of, well, unprecedented scope and complexity.
Exactly. This evolution, and especially the combination of these patterns, is what's driving innovation forward. It's enabling AI to augment human potential far beyond simple task automation. We're talking about potentially accelerating scientific discovery by having AI teams analyze vast data sets, making education truly personalized by having agents adapt curricula in real time, enhancing creative endeavors by providing reliable co-pilots.
Yeah.
This is the pathway towards AI systems that are not just, you know, marginally better or faster, but fundamentally more capable, more reliable, and more adaptable across a huge range of diverse and demanding domains.
Okay, and that brings us, I think, to the most important question for our listeners. Why does understanding this level of architectural depth, these five pillars, why does this matter to you, the listener, right now? It can feel pretty technical.
It can feel technical, but understanding these foundational design principles is absolutely crucial, I believe, regardless of your specific role. If you're a business leader, a strategist, a product manager, grasping the operational implications, understanding the high computational cost of self-reflection loops, recognizing the communication overhead inherent in multi-agent systems, appreciating the security constraints and sandbox requirements of Kodak.
And knowing the trade-offs.
Knowing the trade-offs is essential for making sound strategic investment decisions about AI. Knowing when an iterative React approach is good enough and financially viable versus when you absolutely must invest in the higher cost but higher assurance of a self-reflection loop for quality that allows you to architect AI solutions that are not just technically fancy, but actually commercially sound and fit for purpose.
So it's really about recognizing this critical shift. We're moving away from managing AI tools that just passively assist us towards potentially deploying and managing autonomous systems or teams of systems that actively act and manage complex tasks, sometimes on our behalf.
Yes, exactly. This knowledge empowers you to navigate and maybe even help shape the future of artificial intelligence within your industry or your field. It helps you understand that the conversation has really moved beyond just if AI can do something amazing to the much more practical and critical questions of how reliably, how safely, and at what cost can it orchestrate these complex, multi-layered agentic tasks. That's the frontier now. Hashtag ChagOutro.
So, what does this all mean? We've covered a huge amount of ground today, really diving deep. We moved through these five fundamental architectural pillars, starting with dynamic action through React and Kodak.
Mm-hmm. Reasoning, acting, coding.
Then shifting to internal quality control with self-reflection and external collaboration using multi-agent workflows.
The team approach and self-critique.
And finally, landing on intelligent information processing and synthesis with agentic R.
Yeah, getting the right information reliably. It really highlights, I think, a critical step, maybe an inflection point, toward more mature, more capable, and truly dependable AI applications.
It feels like the days of simple, single-purpose AI models are numbered, or at least they're being rapidly supplemented by these much more complex, specialized, collaborating, and even self-improving agentic entities.
That's the direction of travel, absolutely.
Okay, so as we wrap up this deep dive, let's leave you, our listener, with one final thought to maybe chew on. Something that builds particularly on the implications of Kodak and multi-agent systems.
Right. We talked about how Kodak allows an agent to autonomously debug and refine its own code. We also talked about how multi-agent systems require a strong orchestrator, like a project manager.
Yeah.
Now, consider a near future where an AI agent team handles the entire lifecycle of a complex software project or a data analysis task. from the initial planning using React principles to the coding and execution via Kodak, including rounds of internal self-reflection for quality assurance, all potentially happening before a human manager even sees an initial draft or the first error report.
Wow. So the AI team does the whole first pass, maybe multiple passes autonomously?
Potentially, yes. So if that's the emerging reality, if the technology is genuinely moving toward that kind of autonomous specialization and execution, what skills will you need?
Good question.
What skills will you need to effectively manage, guide, and maybe even debug an autonomous team of specialized AI agents, where your job shifts from directly managing software or tasks to defining the high-level goals, setting the constraints, designing the interaction protocols for the MAS, and maybe intervening only when the team gets stuck?
It's less about managing the tool and more about managing the autonomous team using the tools.
Precisely. The shift isn't just in the technology itself. It points towards a profound, potentially disruptive change in management theory, project management, and even the definition of technical leadership itself.
That is definitely something to think about. How do you manage the managers when the managers are AI?
A provocative question indeed, especially for anyone planning their career, their skill development for the next decade.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the five pillars of agentic AI design. Hopefully, this gives you a clearer map of where things are heading.
Thanks for having me. It was a great discussion.
We'll catch you next time on the Deep Dive.